from the island of Corfu and brought to you on Amazing Affiliates, Back Sports Channels, Talk Superstation, Cosmic Radio, Armed Forces Radio, the Armed Forces Radio Network, and BaseballPodcast.net. This is The Phil Nason Show.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome to The Phil Nason Show, the international sports show with a local sports radio flavor. I'm Phil Nason, and I'm the host of this daily sports show, and I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to listen from wherever you are. We're going to talk NBA basketball today. Aaron Stampler will be here later on to preview six basketball games and to talk a little bit about the New York Knicks. But up first, we're going to talk about a lot of things tonight, a lot of basketball. From WelcomeToLoudCity.com, please welcome their lead writer, my friend, Mr. Zeb Benbrook is here. How you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. I'm ready for some turkey and I'm ready for some basketball.
All right. See, I don't get turkey on Thursday, so I'm out of luck there. But one thing, though, you are in luck if you are a listener of TalkSuperStation.com. This program will be preempted from December 1st until December 7th because Snark Week is here. You folks are in for a treat. Diamond Joe over at Talk Superstation, the superstation of talk, is going to be devoted strictly to comedy for that entire week. Lots of good stuff. Sam Kinison, Richard Pryor, Abbott and Costello. Just a whole bunch of great comedy. So if you get the chance, head on over and stick around for a while. And we'll be back on the air at Talk Superstation, that is, on the 8th of December. Anyway, we have a big game tonight. We're going to lead off with the game of the week, the popcorn match on Wednesday between the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Zeb, what do you like about this basketball game from a Thunder standpoint? Because we will talk about it from a Spurs standpoint on the second half of the show. What do you like?
Well, I mean, as a Thunder fan, you just got to be really, really ready for this matchup to go down. I mean, the Thunder haven't played too many good teams so far this season. We haven't seen Portland, we haven't seen Indiana, we haven't seen San Antonio, we haven't seen anybody who's really been at the top of the table. We've just been, you know, facing some mid to lower teams, and we've had some struggles so far. I mean, I'll admit that the Thunder don't look very scary right now. I mean, they look pretty good. They don't look scary because you've had Russell Westbrook and Kendrick Perkins out for a couple of games, and that kind of that was a negative effect in terms of Westbrook was out for Minnesota, and we lost to Minnesota. And then Perkins was out against Golden State and Los Angeles Clippers, and we lost both of those games. So, you know, injury issues are definitely factoring into it. Now, it doesn't sound right that Kendrick Perkins would actually be responsible for us losing, but when you kind of see who's behind him on the depth chart, I mean, Steven Adams is pretty good, but he's not involved in the offense, and that really kills the offense. And Hasheem Thabeet is absolutely terrible whenever you have to play him. We saw that against the Clippers. So, basically, I think that this is going to be a really good matchup because it's the first test we have of this new system we're running in Oklahoma City. Right now we've got starters. We've got our starters and our backups almost in entirely different worlds. This is something I talked about in my article that I wrote yesterday, analyzing the Thunder's different lineups, because on the bench, we used to have players who could directly replace the starters. So if we're thinking back to 2012, Nazir Muhammad would replace Kendrick Perkins, Nick Collison would replace Serge Ibaka, James Harden would replace Durant and Westbrook, and Daquan Cook would replace Thabo Sefolosha. Now, Reggie Jackson slash Derek Fisher was kind of a different story. They were kind of a player all on their own, but for the most part, you had replaceable parts in the starting lineup that you could just kind of throw in there, and it would be the same thing. Whereas now, even though Collison is still on the team, it's almost an entirely different story. We're running an entirely different offense when the 5 to 6 bench players are on the floor. And we kind of do platoon substitutions. So basically what happens is you've got two entirely different teams playing the game and affecting each other's score. And then at the end of the game, the two teams mix and we try to find the ideal lineup. So it's worked well for us so far because we've had comebacks against teams like Washington and Golden State. just really big comebacks because we've been able to put in that ideal lineup between the starters and the bench. But the downside of that is that the starters and the bench don't see much mixing until the very end of the game, so you don't know exactly how good it's going to be. So I think that the Spurs kind of offer the first true test of that, because they're going to be a team that's going to have a consistent lineup, a consistent strategy, whereas the Thunder will have a different strategies. And if the Spurs are like really good against one but really bad against another, we could see a game with like huge runs in different quarters. Or if the Spurs find a way to exploit it, we might find ourselves mixing lineups, you know, like we haven't had to do before this season until the end of the game. So I think it's going to be a really intriguing matchup. I mean, honestly, it's a coin flip at this point because you haven't seen them play each other, and you know that both of these teams are really competitive and will go down to the wire. So, you know, as a Thunder fan, I'm just going to predict a Thunder victory.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about interchangeable parts, that's the San Antonio Spurs. Right down the line, their bench is very strong. They're second in the league in defense, or I should say in points allowed. You know, they're only giving up 90 points a game. That's one of the tests for San Antonio, by the way. How will they be able to stop the Oklahoma City Thunder offense, who average about 103, 104 points a game? That's where the rubber is going to meet the road. But they are deep. It should be interesting. I took San Antonio. I think that they're going to probably be a couple of points better, maybe. But this is going to be a popcorn match. You sit back and do whatever and watch a great basketball game. My man, third row, he's going to be well rested, and it's going to be a lot of fun. There's no doubt about that. Now, Indiana, they had, I believe, Indiana is heading to Charlotte to take on the Bobcats. I like Indiana. Now, they are an amazingly good team, at least right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really like Indiana as well. Last year, they were a really good team, but like Portland, who's another team that's done really well this year, they had absolutely no bench. I mean, you had DJ Augustin coming off the bench, just absolutely wasting minutes. Nobody that they could really insert helped them to any extent. Whereas at this point, they've got Luis Scola, who, you know, is good enough to be a starter. I mean, even though he's older, he's a really experienced scoring type of post presence, and it's really rare to get a scoring post presence on your bench. So, I mean, that's huge. And then you've got CJ Watson, who came in, and I saw him play a lot with the Warriors. He was pretty good there. He was part of the Chicago Bulls bench mob a couple of years ago. So he's really good defensively. He kind of fits into that defensive ethos. And Orlando Johnson, who's, I think, is a rookie who came on for their team and has been able to produce consistent minutes. So now that they have two or three players that they can rely on the bench, you really kind of see how great this Indiana team is. I mean, they're really ugly to watch at times, and but they're really good. But honestly, tonight's matchup is probably going to be pretty ugly because the Bobcats are playing a really defensive game right now. Their new coach has been kind of instilling a sense of defense, trying to establish a team identity. They're 7-7, you know, but the record's kind of smoke and mirrors at this point. I'm not really too confident in how well the Bobcats are going to do. So I'm going to go with Indiana in this one just because, you know, they're rolling and I don't see anything stopping them.
Yeah, they're incredible this season thus far. Their bench, and you left out a couple guys. Chris Copeland is starting to come through with a shot, but Ian Mahimney is really taking care of business. And that's the difference. You know, Roy Hibbert didn't have a replacement before. Now he does. And here's the crazy thing, is they're doing all this without Danny Granger. And that's something that I take a lot of stock in, because I had a lot of, and still do, respect for Danny Granger's abilities in his game. But Charlotte, they're going to have to play defense better than they've ever played this season if they want to stay with Indiana. And I just don't think they can. I'm going to stay with Indiana on this one all the way. Frank Vogel and the boys, they should be 14-1 after Wednesday night. Should be interesting. And then we have this matchup. This one here is intriguing to me. Is the Los Angeles Lakers are taking on the Brooklyn Nets at home. Brooklyn is on the road. They are definitely, they're at home against the Los Angeles Lakers. Forgive me. I looked at it the wrong way. What do you like about this? There's a lot of talk about the Brooklyn Nets, man.
Oh man, I mean they've been an absolute disaster. When you pose them to their salary cap, what moves they've made. I mean, it's just been, you know, close loss after close loss. Now they're starting to really fade. I mean, they got blown out by Minnesota. They were down by 12 points against Detroit when it was all said and done. So they're really starting to fall off the map in terms of chemistry now. I'm not close to the Nets. I don't like watch the team all the time because I have a West Coast bias, but I do know that they I do know that they're falling apart. So I don't know what like the coaching situation is like, but they've got a rookie coach. And I mean, I think the bottom line for that team is that you just threw in too many different parts and cultures together at one point, because you had a successful team last year. You kind of rid a whole lot of the roster. You keep the stars. You get the stars from another team, bring them in, and you try to, you know, mix two entirely different cultures to the, you know, and make it a successful team just based on talent alone, you know? And they haven't been able to do that. I mean, we saw Miami was able to do that, and it's not a question of chemistry, in my opinion, because I think this is the NBA and they're professionals, and that's not often going to be an issue. But Miami was able to do that because they designed an offense that revolved around LeBron James and Dwayne Wade's abilities as players. And they have similar abilities as players, and they work together well, and they're friends. So it works out. And then you've got Chris Bosh, who's always a bonus, you know? But here, it was just kind of like a fantasy team, you know, with the Mikhail Prokhorov with all his money. And he came together and said, oh, you know, how do we be successful? We put really good players together on the same roster, and it's going to work. We put, you know, a point guard who was really well respected in the league, and we throw him in as coach. We don't, you know, look for somebody who has an established reputation. We just know he's going to be a good coach. Now, that worked before for Mark Cuban when he inserted Avery Johnson, but Mark Cuban was on the sideline almost every single game listening in on what Avery Johnson was saying to the players in the timeouts and knew that he was ready to be a coach, whereas you don't necessarily know the same thing about Brooklyn. So, you know, I think it's just a case of just not knowing how to exactly build a basketball team together. Plus the fact that, of course, I know you, Phil, really hate Joe Johnson and Deron Williams, that backcourt, and that's a part of it too, just because they're not that effective as players in general. So, in this matchup, I honestly think that Brooklyn could pull it out, just because, you know, the Lakers can win or lose to anybody. It just really depends on how well Jordan Hill is getting on the offensive rebounds, how well their bench is coalescing together, if Pau Gasol is going to show up on tonight, you know, get a 20-10 game. So it's, you know, because the Lakers fluctuate wildly. So I'm going to go with a little bit of an upset and say that the Brooklyn Nets will kind of put it together and win tonight. But, you know, it could really go either way.
You know what? I love that backcourt as a fantasy, though, with Deron Williams and Joe Johnson. In fact, I had them on my championship fantasy team last year. But in a reality team, no. You know, one of the problems that this Prokhorov is about to face, if he hasn't already faced it, Father Time is undefeated. And he's going up against, with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, Father Time. Deron Williams is injured. Okay, he's got an excuse somewhat anyway. Brook Lopez is injured. These older fellas can't play 35 minutes a game, man, every night, and expect to be strong and healthy. And then you've got AK-47, who's hurt too. Andre Kirilenko, he's injured. He's got back spasms. He's got this. He's got that. It's just one of those things. And then, you know, there was this anonymous source that kind of asked what Jason Kidd actually does, because apparently Lawrence Frank is the runs the offense, and another assistant, I can't remember his name, runs the defense. So you have all these ingredients, and it's made a really bad soup. You can't even make good stew out of this, you know, or goulash. You know, we grew up poor, and my mother was able to put all kinds of things together, and it would come out all right. You know, we didn't starve to death. But this goulash or stew, it's just rancid. It's rancid all the way through. And something's going to have to happen here. And the Lakers, you know, they just re-signed Kobe Bryant for 2 more years, extended his contract. And that's a good thing, because they want him to retire as a Laker. what is he going to be like when he returns? But he's not even there, so we wouldn't worry about him. But Joe Johnson played pretty well for Brooklyn the other night against Detroit, even though they lost. He had 34 points. But before that, Zeb, this cat is averaging – he's getting about $1 million for every point averaged. He's got the worst contract in basketball, or the best, if it, depending on your point of view.
Are you talking Joe Johnson?
Joe Johnson, yeah. He's got a horrible contract. I mean, that's expensive. He was averaging, I think, 19 points a game, and he's getting $21 million a year. So you have what you have. You throw all that together, and you've got a mess. And that's why you have the 3-10 Brooklyn Nets at the time of this recording. And that's why I said what I said about them at the beginning of the season, and I will continue to say it's not chemistry. It's just a bad, bad team with great fantasy players if they're allowed to play. But as a realistic team, no. But I'm going to take Brooklyn on Wednesday night over the Los Angeles Lakers because, like you said, anything can happen with the Lakers. They are on the road. Got to give up some props to one of these bunch of bums. All right, you know what I mean. I can't poo-poo on Brooklyn all the time. Yeah. Chicago, Detroit. Bad news there too, huh? Derrick Rose out for the season. There goes the number one seed that I thought they would get. What in the world? What is going on here?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm honest. You know, it's honestly just one of those things that you're like, you know, the dark humor in you just wants to say, oh, wouldn't it be funny if Derrick Rose got injured and he was out for the entire season again? And you know, then there he goes. You know, he's out with the other injury with the torn meniscus. We at Welcome Lot City, I mean, I obviously have talked about this before where we did an interview about meniscus injuries, and I think the same thing applies here. Derrick Rose is probably, I think he did get his injury sewn back together. He got his meniscus repaired, so it's going to be a longer recovery, but it could be better for the future of his career. I mean, if he can stay together for more than 10 games, but it's something that's good because I think Dwayne Wade got his meniscus removed, and he's had knee issues his entire career, and they're not going to go away until he retires. Whereas Russell Westbrook got the injury sewn together and was repaired, so he was able to have a lot. He'd had a long recovery, but he's basically at 100% now. People say he's looking a little bit rusty, but his explosiveness and his athleticism is still there. Whereas his shot isn't, so that's just kind of an issue of practice, I would say. So I think that it's good that he got it repaired instead of removed. So it'll be good for his career down the line. But right now, the Bulls, like the Pacers a couple of years ago, can't rely on Derrick Rose. I mean, the Pacers couldn't rely on Danny Granger a couple of years ago. Right now, the Bulls can't rely on Derrick Rose. They just can't bank on it. They've got to go with what they have. Now, most of the talk on the Bulls websites right now is revolving around how do we get under this luxury tax? How do we become financially viable? How do we, just kind of move forward so that we're still a contender a couple of years down the road? And it's a really interesting question because a couple of years ago they had a really good bench, but then they had to wipe that entire bench away because they had because they were going to go over the luxury tax. So they needed to bring in less expensive players. And that's probably what's going to happen over this next season because they spent money, you know, just chump change on players like Mike Dunleavy that they're not going to be able to afford anymore. And they're talking about trading away Luol Deng, things like that. So, I think that we could see some significant change in Chicago either towards kind of a rebuilding movement, maybe getting away some of the bigger, more expensive contracts, or just kind of going with it as is, kind of becoming maybe a Memphis Grizzlies caliber team where you see them competing into the mid to late playoffs if they get the right matchups, you know? And it's just they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You don't know whether they're going to succeed and find a way to be the Indiana Pacers and do really well, or they're just going to be kind of stuck in the middle of being really good, like, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, I know if you're a fan of the Charlotte Bobcats, the Milwaukee Bucks, you're like, well, you have to complain about, but you know, it still kind of sucks for Bulls fans.
Absolutely. It sucks for NBA fans because Derrick Rose is someone that we all like to watch usually. But yeah, it's tough. I think they're going to end up blowing that team up. I think Joakim Noah is also going to be moved. It should be interesting. There's no doubt. And Detroit. Detroit plays the way Detroit plays. They're the Rucker Park Street Legends 2.0. And, jeez, Chicago's reeling, man. You know they are. That clubhouse, that locker room has got to just be down. I mean, they waited for a whole year for this kid to come back, and he's not there. Not good. I'm going to take Detroit here in Auburn Hills. I think Detroit's going to take them out quite handily, actually.
Yeah, I'll definitely go with Detroit for basically the same reasons.
Should be interesting. Now, what should be really interesting is LeBron James returns to Cleveland, the scene of the crime. He's not even a good thief. He has to go back to the scene of the crime. But this isn't going to be much of a game, is it?
You know, not with the way Cleveland's playing right now. I mean, the entire Cleveland fan base is down. I mean, the sole positive thing they've got to focus on is Andrew Bynum's returned and he's doing kind of well. So that's there for them. But, you know, they've just got a whole lot of other issues. I mean, it's kind of sad to see because a lot of people predicted Cleveland would be one of those surprise good teams this year, kind of like Washington, just because they made a few moves that they had some young talent that you thought was really going to, you know, really develop and be what they were supposed to be. But so far, like, you know, Kyrie Irving and Dion Waiters have had low percentages and the Cavaliers just haven't been able to put it together. And of course the Heat, I mean, they're just in cruise control. They're going to be in cruise control all season. I don't really see them really having a intense need to go for the number one seed simply because their players are too injury prone and they've come too close to failing in the playoffs before. You know, it's almost like a Boston Celtics situation a couple of years ago where they would just kind of, you know, not care about the regular season as long as they could get a mid playoff seed and do well. Now it's not as bad with Miami because they're obviously not as old and they don't have the same issues. So I think that Miami could do is, you know, going to be able to win this one. This is one of those games that they're just going to be able to win on talent alone. They need to win it. But, you know, I'll be interested to tune in and see just how much they still hate LeBron James. I mean, it's been a couple of years now. James has gone off and developed his own identity. The vast majority of NBA fans don't really identify with Cleveland fans in terms of that situation anymore. So it's, you know, you'll see like just how much hate they have, because when Oklahoma City traveled to Utah early in the season, they were still booing Derek Fisher for leaving to L.A. because he, you know, supposedly needed a better doctor for his child, when it was just kind of a sly lie to get him back to L.A. in the views of Utah fans. So they were still booing him, and it's been like 3 or 4 years, and Derek Fisher isn't even that important of a player anymore. So, I mean, it's probably been more than 3 or 4 years, but that situation has probably been like 6 years since that happened. In this situation, you got 3 years, so it'll be interesting to see if Cleveland fans are as hateful as Utah fans and will just continue to boo LeBron James for the rest of his career, regardless of what he does, unless he comes back to Cleveland. So, I'll go with Miami in that one.
I'll take Miami, too, but he's going to get booed. Of course he is. I have friends that live in Akron, and he's going to get booed. He disappeared on them. He treated them like redheaded stepchildren. And it wasn't nice, and he deserves everything he gets. I don't care how many championships he wins. The people in Cleveland wanted to see him win a championship in Cleveland. But he was too cowardly and too inexperienced and not good enough to win on his own. He couldn't get anyone to come to Cleveland. He had to go somewhere else and hook up with his buddies to win. And he's going to get booed. And that's his business. And he can handle his business. Unlike, say, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, when they return to the Boston Garden, they're going to get cheered. When Kevin Garnett last week got to 50,000 minutes career, he did it in Minnesota. They gave him a standing ovation. That's the difference. When you get traded, they love you still if you were a great player in the organization. If you walk away for less money, you betrayed them. Anyway, we've got time for like 30 seconds here. We've got the Atlanta Hawks. And they are traveling to the Houston Rockets. Who you got in this, real quick?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Atlanta just because Houston's dealt with injury issues. And Atlanta's just kind of one of those teams I think is going to be the 3 or 4 seed in the Eastern Conference until I'm 75 years old. And they're still not going to be able to get any fans to come to their game. So Atlanta in that one.
I'm taking Atlanta also. I think Atlanta's got a better team than people give them credit for. I'm not a big fan of the beard or the weird. So I'm taking the Atlanta Hawks. Zeb, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure as always.
All right. That was Zeb Benbrook. You can find him at welcometoloudcity.com. Coming up next, Aaron Stampler and I will talk about a lot of things in the NBA and preview six games. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Snark Week is coming.
What do you say to people who accuse you of bad taste?
Well, I think it probably comes from porn as well.
I say, I'm yours!
Snark Week on the Talk Superstation.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com.
CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, and joining me from PoundingTheRock.com, please welcome lead writer, Mr. Aaron Stampler. Aaron, how you doing today? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm winding things up, and it's going to be nice, and I'm going to go relax. Watch a little bit of Real Housewives tonight.
What? You're not going to watch Champions League soccer?
No. I don't watch Champions League soccer.
Oh, man. You're missing out.
No. What's that?
You're missing out.
I'm missing nothing. But I'm missing nothing. I'd rather watch paint dry.
Well, Real Housewives might be close.
Okay, but you know what, though? There's more action in those shows.
I'll take your word for it.
No, there really is. I love watching these rich people with nothing better to do than trash each other and look like shallow individuals for 48 minutes. There's nothing better than that.
I watch rich people bounce basketballs for 48 minutes.
Well, there aren't any games for me at that point of the night, so I just wait till the next day. But anyway, speaking of big games, Wednesday night, the San Antonio Spurs travel to Oklahoma City to take on the Thunder. What's your take on that game?
Well, obviously, I'm extremely excited about this. I mean, I've been looking forward to this. Really, this is like the first big game of the season for the Spurs. And, I mean, you had all these pundits, all these talking heads acting like it was a mere formality for Oklahoma City to make the finals last year if Westbrook didn't get hurt. And they're acting like – everybody's acting like, oh, the Spurs got so lucky and they got like a bye to the finals just because Westbrook was hurt. And I think the way the Spurs are playing this year, I think the way the Spurs kind of played in the finals where they took Miami to seven games and almost won it in six. I mean, they should have won it in six. Compare that to how that Oklahoma City team, like, you know, went down so easily to Miami in five games the year before, and that was with James Harden. You know, I think that argument's kind of silly, but I think tonight's game where the Spurs are going to be at Oklahoma City, who are undefeated, 6-0 at home, I think if the Spurs could get a win and maybe even a convincing win in that game, it would go a long way toward shutting those people up.
Perhaps it will. It's still November, though, so a lot of people poo-poo the Spurs. They seem to do that every year. And I can't understand why you would poo-poo an organization that averages 50 wins a season nearly every year. So for me, though, I think it's going to be a battle of the point guards, to be honest with you. Who performs the most? Will it be Russell Westbrook or will it be Tony Parker? That's the matchup I'm looking at as key in this basketball game on Wednesday. What do you think?
Well, I think you're probably right, but I think historically Parker's gotten the better of Westbrook, who just really defensively hasn't had much of an answer for him. Whereas on the other end of the floor, sometimes the Spurs guard Westbrook with different people like Danny Green. And so far this season, you know, Westbrook's still coming off that meniscus injury. He's been, you know, he's been getting better, but he's still not playing that great. He's only shooting 41%. He's only averaging 5 assists to 4.3 turnovers, you know, which is miserable for a point guard. Kevin Durant's actually leading the team in assists, believe it or not. And so I think right now Parker has an early edge. And Westbrook also might be a little rusty. The team rested him against Utah on their last game Sunday night, you know, didn't play him at all. So he hasn't played since last Thursday, so it's going to be 6 days off before he plays the Spurs. And that, you know, I think 6 days, you're getting into rust versus rest territory there.
Yeah, perhaps. Now, what's going on with Tim Duncan? He has really struggled this first month of the season.
Yeah, his shooting has been off, but he's getting better. He shot 50% the last three games. His outside shot is slowly coming back. He's actually making a couple of bankers here and there, which he's kind of gotten away from in the last couple of years. You know, he's preferred just to shoot him straight on like everybody else in the NBA does. But last couple of games, he's hit a couple of bankers. And, you know, really, I think the problem with Duncan, and, you know, you could put Parker in there, you could put Kawhi Leonard, Ginobili, whoever, is they've blown so many teams out lately. They're playing so few minutes, it's almost hard for these guys to get in much of a rhythm. I mean, their games are over by halftime. These guys are playing 20 minutes a night.
Yeah, pretty much. And the thing, too, is with the San Antonio Spurs is their bench is much deeper, I think anyway, than Oklahoma City. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Their bench is way deeper. That's been the formula for the Spurs. I mean, their starters are doing pretty well. I mean, they're usually outscoring the opposing starters or, you know, keeping it, you know, hanging in there at least, you know, holding their own. But once the benches come into the game, I mean, that's when the Spurs just killing people, especially from outside. Bellinelli is shooting 55% from three. Patty Mills is shooting 45% from three. Ginobili's been really red hot lately after a bad start. He's made 14 of his last 24 threes, so he's up to 36%. Bonner's come back from his calf strain. He's at 50%. And really, the only guy on the bench struggling from three-point land, believe it or not, is Boris Diaw. But he's just destroying people inside. He's got these little up-and-under moves, these little spin moves. He's a lot quicker than people think he is. And he's really abusing opposing backup big men.
Yes, he is. And I'll tell you what, when we talk about Kevin Durant, he's talked about him leading the team in assists. You know, that just goes to show you just how good this guy is and how much better he's gotten. You know, the knock was that he was just a shooter, and now he's become a facilitator as well. He makes his other teammates better. And what about Serge Ibaka? Serge Ibaka's having a very decent season as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question right now. He's their second-best player. I mean, the way Westbrook has struggled, I mean, he's giving you 14 and 10. But the thing about Oklahoma City that, you know, they don't get much credit for because of the explosiveness of Durant and Westbrook is that they're actually a better defensive team than an offensive team these days. And the length they have in their starting lineup with Durant and Westbrook and Thabo Sefolosha and Kendrick Perkins and Ibaka, and it's just, they're just a bunch of really athletic, long-armed guys, and it makes it tough to score in the half court, and I think that's been their key. I mean, offensively, the team is kind of struggling for them. I mean, they play at a fast pace, so it kind of masks some of their shooting struggles, but as a team, they don't really shoot that well, especially from three-point land. Even Durant is struggling a little bit in that regard. But just the way they play defense in the half court and the way they live at the free throw line between Durant and Westbrook, that's how they win games.
Yeah, pretty much. I think you're right. I think Thabo Sefolosha is going to need to step up. I think if I were going to bet on this one, though, I would probably have to take San Antonio tonight. Or, I'm sorry, on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in better form. I mean, like I said, Oklahoma City is 6-0 at home. And, you know, the Spurs have to lose at some point, you'd think. But right now, the way they're playing, I mean, it's just, you can't pick against them.
Nope, you sure can't. Moving on, the Memphis Grizzlies travel to Boston to take on the Celtics. What do you like about this game?
Well, I like that it's going to be a rematch of a game that was pretty competitive the first time out at Memphis. The Celtics were actually up after three quarters in that one before the Grizzlies blitzed them with a 29-16 fourth quarter to pull that game out. And that was like the one game the whole season Jared Bayless played well for the Grizzlies so far, and you know that was the key to the game. But of course, you know what changes things for this game is that Marc Gasol's out. You know, he hurt his left MCL against the Spurs last week, and he's going to be out for at least 2 months. And that really fundamentally changes everything about them because as well as Mike Conley's played for them, I mean, these guys don't have any pick-and-roll players on the wing. So a lot of their offense is initiated by Gasol, you know, as a point center of sorts. And without, you know, without him, it hurts them on offense. It hurts them on defense. He covers a lot of Zach Randolph's limitations there on defense. You know, he's the reigning defensive player of the year. And without Marc Gasol, I mean, who's unquestionably the team's best player, I mean, this team is really going to struggle, I think, and they're probably not going to make the playoffs even if he misses 2 months. I mean, they're going to need Kostas Koufos to really, really hold the fort for them to have any kind of chance whatsoever. You know, it's not like the Celtics are any good, so maybe, you know, the Grizzlies could theoretically get a win on Boston, but it doesn't really mean a whole lot in the long term.
Well, it'll mean something in the short term, though. And you know something, Kostas Koufos is only 24. People talk about him all the time. He was the starting center in Denver last season. He's going to step in. He's not going to do the things that Gasol does. But then there aren't that many centers who do what Marc Gasol does. But that's going to be immaterial. Gasol could be healthy and sit out tonight or Wednesday night's game, and they would still beat Boston.
Well, the one thing Boston is that right now, Jared Sullinger is looking like a real player for them. I mean, he was their first-round pick last year, most of the season with a back injury. But he's coming on strong in his second season. He had a 19-17 game versus Spurs last week. And I think he's been their best player overall. And, you know, you have Jeff Green, who's been pretty good for them. Jordan Crawford, who they've kind of shoehorned into their point guard position because they have nobody else to play it, really. And he's been productive, especially as a shooting point guard. And Brad Stevens has quietly built a decent enough 10-man rotation, you know, out of the pieces they have. You know, no stars, really. But, I mean, they've won back-to-back road games at Atlanta and Charlotte. I mean, Atlanta, you could argue, is like the third-best team in the Eastern Conference right now. And, you know, Boston beat them at Atlanta, outscored them 30-13 in the fourth quarter. You know, really held them down defensively. So, I mean, you know, Boston, at least, they're competitive most nights, except for those, you know, few games where maybe they're on the road in the Western Conference against, like, the best teams. But, you know, outside of that, they've been pretty competitive.
Yes, they have. Jordan Crawford is probably their best player now. But that's not going to be enough. Mike Conley is going to eat them alive on Wednesday night. I've got the Memphis Grizzlies hammering the Boston Celtics in the Garden. Anyway, we got to move on here, dude. Minnesota hosts the Denver Nuggets. Big matchup. What do you like about this one?
I like the first time these guys played. It was 117-113 at Denver. A very entertaining, very evenly played game. Top players for both teams played really well. There wasn't much defense, obviously, and really the game came down to Wilson Chandler hitting some shots late off the bench. So, I mean, I look for it to be another close game, another exciting game. I mean, I think both of these teams are fairly even, you know, in the lower tier of the Western Conference playoff race, somewhere between the 7th and, you know, 10th best teams in the conference. So I think it's a really even matchup, especially with Chandler back in the lineup for Denver.
Yeah, I like Chandler back in the lineup. Minnesota got spanked by Indiana on Monday, and they exposed them. You know, they couldn't get into the transition against Indiana. I think Denver's the same type of way. I think they probably learned something from that. You won't see those long outlet passes from Kevin Love against Denver. They're too quick for that. I like Denver in this. I'll tell you what, I really like what's going on there. The only thing that I don't like is how little Kenneth Faried plays. But that's I'm not the coach, though.
At least he's back in the starting lineup. I mean, he started the season not even starting. I think really Denver's taken off ever since they got Wilson Chandler back in the lineup and they lost JaVale McGee. I think they weren't playing very good defense at all with JaVale McGee back in there. Him and Faried have all kinds of communication issues, you know, especially in the pick and roll. And ever since, you know, McGee just does a lot of dumb things out there. And without him, you know, it's addition by subtraction almost. And I think they should have kept Kufos, really. I mean, I think Denver's been worse without him. And Chandler's helped stabilize them somewhat. And lately, they've played without a center. They're starting at, like, J.J. Hickson, Kenneth Faried, and Wilson Chandler in their starting lineup and playing without a center. And it's worked out for them. I mean, in their little winning streak here, they've won 6 of the last 8 games after starting 1-4. They've beaten Dallas in a, you know, home-and-home series. They handed the Mavs their first home loss of the season last on Monday. And so I think right now they're in pretty good form compared to Minnesota, who've lost four of their past five. Although, you know, they've played some really good teams. Like, they played at Houston, at Indiana. So, you know, you could almost excuse losses like that.
I'll tell you what, since JaVale McGee's been out, J.J. Hickson stepped in and just stepped up. And that's big, too. I'm taking Denver in this one.
I'm inclined to agree, if only because Denver has Ty Lawson, who's quietly had a great season so far. He's averaging 20.7 points, 8.7 assists. I mean, he doesn't have a prayer of making an all-star game because, you know, you have Chris Paul and you have Stephen Curry and Tony Parker and guys like that. You know, the West is so loaded at point guard. But Ty Lawson's quietly had a great season so far for the Nuggets.
He absolutely has. You know, you can't take anything away from him. He's shooting the ball a little better, too. And it's all about those big guys around him. You know, that's very helpful. So Denver's my team in this one. It has to be. Now, this battle here is coming up. Dallas entertains the Golden State Warriors. Golden State is now without Andre Iguodala, who is out indefinitely. This should be interesting. I think Dallas is playing pretty well also, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they were, except they've lost 2 in a row to Nuggets. But outside of that, they were playing well, especially at home. The surprising thing about Dallas is just how well Monte Ellis has continued to play. I mean, we're like now, 13, 14 games into the season. So you can't just say, oh, it's a couple good games here and there. He's still playing, he's still shooting 50%, 36% from three, where his critics have always alleged that he can't really shoot from three. And he's surprisingly leading the team assists, not Jose Calderon. So, I mean, between Ellis and Nowitzki, they have a hell of a 1-2 punch there in Dallas. And I think it might be enough to put them over the Warriors, who really are missing Iguodala, number one, and just haven't been that good of a road team, number two.
No, they haven't. The Bombs Away boys have had a tough time on the road. But you almost have to like – you almost honestly have to like this Dallas team, though. And I know that I do. I don't know why either, to be honest with you. DeJuan Blair's having a pretty quietly good season for them. But Monte Ellis is the guy who's just – he's changed completely. I don't know why that is. It probably has a lot to do with Rick Carlisle or Dirk Nowitzki or DeJuan Blair smacking him upside the head. But either way, this Dallas team is fascinating. But Golden State, they're just fun to watch. They're going to miss Iguodala, and I don't know how long he's going to be gone. Those hamstrings can be tough. But the Bombs Away boys, I think they have enough to pull this one out and win this basketball game. What do you think?
Well, I mean, there's no question that I think playing with Nowitzki buys Ellis a lot of room that he hasn't necessarily had playing on past teams. Like with Milwaukee, you know, obviously he's going to get guarded a lot tighter. I mean, who are you afraid of on Milwaukee if you're not afraid of Monte Ellis? You know, so I think playing with Nowitzki buys Ellis more room, and that could explain, you know, his resurgence in Dallas. But as far as the Warriors go, I think right now with Iguodala out, it really hurts their bench. I mean, obviously Iguodala was starting for them, but now it thrusts Harrison Barnes back into the starting role, and now their bench is very limited. I mean, you have Draymond Green as their best bench player now, and, you know, he's not much of a scorer. You've got guys like Jermaine O'Neal who's out, Tony Douglas who's hit and miss, Maurice Spreitz who really hasn't been shooting very well. So, I mean, it puts a lot of stress on their starters to play big minutes to win games, especially on the road. And you know how Curry's, you know, a very injury-prone guy himself. He's already missed time with a foot injury. He's already missed time with a concussion. So it really strains them, you know, to get things done with the starting lineup. But I just think Dallas is going to be too deep for them.
Okay, fair enough. I think you're going to find out on Wednesday night that the Bombs Away boys are going to have an exciting finish and beat Dallas in their own house. Now, this game here is going to be intriguing. The New York Knicks take on the Los Angeles Clippers. What do you like about this game?
Your beloved Knicks. I don't like anything about them. They've lost six in a row. They're 2-7 without Tyson Chandler. They're bad on offense, 22nd in efficiency. They're bad in defense, 27th in defensive efficiency. They're tied for 28th in rebound rate. This team literally does nothing well, except for, and this is the most surprising stat in the league, they lead the league in turnover rate at just 12.3%. They're more careful with the ball than any team in the league. Maybe it's just because they just jack it up from three right away and, you know, and just put the shot up versus turning it over. But, I mean, outside of being careful with the ball, the Knicks are just a horrid, horrid mess right now, and I feel bad for their fans.
Well, don't feel too bad for the fans, you know. But that's not a surprising stat that they're leading the league in turnover, right? They did that last year. I watched every game they play like you watch the Spurs, and I can tell you that they do take care of the ball. They don't just come down and bombs away either. And a lot of people, you know, have written them off already, and maybe I have too. Bottom line, they haven't played well. But the one thing that this team has, they have Carmelo Anthony, who, by the way, is really starting to bust his tail and get out there and fight and get it done. He's rebounding the ball. But the problem with him is he doesn't make his teammates better. Anywhere he's been, his teammates aren't better because of him. And that's the biggest issue I have with me, myself, and Melo, is that it's all about Melo. And then you have J.R. Smith coming off the bench again. That's an issue. Raymond Felton is probably out still, I'm sure. And you've just got a hot mess there.
The one thing with Carmelo you can't fault him for is at least he's giving effort on the rebounds. I mean, he's averaging a career high 10.2 boards. He's never been anywhere close to that before in his career. He's gotten 64 rebounds the last five games. His problem is he's just not shooting very well. He's shooting 43% from the field, 33% from three. And those numbers are a little surprising considering he's playing a lot as a power forward, you know, these days. So you'd think he'd be closer to the basket. You'd think he'd have the advantage athletically against the opposing power forwards. But it's just not translated into shooting numbers. I think he's just carrying too much of a burden there, feeling he has to score too much to make up for the deficiencies they have elsewhere. But, I mean, Carmelo is the least of their scoring problems. I mean, outside of Andrea Bargnani, who's shooting 46%, nobody is shooting well for the Knicks. J.R. Smith is at 32%. Felton's at 38%. And the guy that all the New York fans seem to overrate, Iman Shumpert, he's at 40%. I mean, people act like Iman Shumpert is this untouchable guy to trade, and, you know, the Knicks would be crazy to let go of him. I mean, he's giving you 7 points and four rebounds in 30 minutes and shooting 40%. I don't understand what makes him exactly so untouchable. He seems like a pretty overrated guy to me, who's just a product of the New York hype.
Okay, well, here's why the fans, and I was all for trading him a couple seasons ago and even last season and now, in fact. I don't find him untouchable at all. The thing is, though, is during his rookie season, he was incredibly tenacious on defense, and people saw this bright spot or this future shining star in New York, and then he got hurt, and he just hasn't been the same. I think it's a tough place to play for anyone, but particularly for someone who was injured, and it was a horrific injury. He came back maybe too soon. He hasn't been hurt since, but he just doesn't have that same tenacious or that tenacity on defense that he had before. And again, you know, you talk about Carmelo Anthony. We do pat him on the back for rebounds, but in his shooting, there's a reason for that too. He's double-teamed all the time because there's no one else on that team that can shoot. So you can basically double and sometimes triple-team him, and he's never been a passer out of the double team or any other time for that matter. And that's why you have the mess that you have. And I think Mike Woodson, they say that he hasn't lost that team. But any time that you have a basketball team with such high expectations based on last season as the Knicks do, and they're already – they've had, what, one closed-door meeting? Carmelo Anthony's come out in the newspaper and actually stated, it looks like we aren't trying. When you have that in the first 4 weeks of the season, I think the coaches already lost that team.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like it, but I mean, I really don't know how much you could blame on him and how much you could just blame on the personnel. Just the personnel just doesn't seem very solid to me. I think Tyson Chandler was the backbone of that team. He did so much for them defensively. I mean, he made up for a lot of their defensive ills around the perimeter. And without him, I mean, it's kind of like a layup line inside. You know, Bargnani's not going to protect the basket. The other bigs they have are very limited. You know, Amari plays 13 minutes and he's not any kind of defender. Kenyon Martin gives you 12 minutes. I mean, what's he going to do at his age and with his situation? It just the Knicks can't stop anybody defensively, and offensively they just don't have enough shooters to, you know, to outscore teams. So it's just a big, like you said, it's like a big hot mess for them.
It most certainly is, and they have to take on Lob City and with Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan playing the way they are. I don't see any hope for the Knicks defeating the Clippers.
Me neither. It's going to be a very one-sided game. I think Jordan and Griffin are going to go nuts inside.
Yep, perhaps. Anyhow, we've got about 35 seconds left, and we have Phoenix hosting the Portland Trailblazers. I'm taking the Trailblazers. I'm just amazed how well they're playing. I'm amazed more at their record than at how well they're playing. I thought they played well before. I thought they were going to be good. What do you think about this game? You got Portland with me?
Oh, obviously. I mean, just the way they beat the Warriors on the road the other day. I mean, with this big fourth quarter comeback they had, and Aldridge had 30 points and 21 rebounds for them. I think that was amazing. And right now, along with the Spurs, they're the hottest team in the league, and they're beating every team they should beat, and then winning some games that surprise you, like the Warriors game. And I just right now, it's just their starting lineup is playing really well. They're getting a couple of guys going on the bench, and I mean, they're playing as well as they could possibly play right now.
They certainly are. All right. Great stuff tonight, Aaron. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That was Aaron Stampler. You can find him at poundingtherock.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason show. I want to thank both my guests for being here. Also want to remind you that if you are a TalkSuperStation.com listener, and we know several of you are, next week will be preempted. Won't be aired on the station because of Snark Week. It's got great comedy. I hope that you guys get over there and tune in, and you all know where to find me when you get done listening to the great comedy that Diamond Joe presents. Until then, and until tomorrow, and the next time up, I should say, we'll be talking Hot Stove Baseball with Alex Hall and Mark Berman. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.